I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now, normally at this time, we'd be heading off to the barber shop right about now, but we heard from the guys earlier this week, so today we decided to head to the beauty shop instead and hear what the ladies have to say about the news of the week. Joining us in the shop today, Gail Zemach-Lamont. She is author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dressmaker of Karkana. That is the true story of how a remarkable woman managed to take care of her family and herself under the Taliban. Gail's also a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, and she's joining us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Michelle.
Also with us here in our Washington, D.C. studios, Jamie Tarabay, managing editor on national security for the National Journal. You will recognize that name from her time here at NPR, where she was Baghdad bureau chief, among other assignments. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
And also with us, Mona El-Tahawi. She is a very well-known columnist and speaker. She focuses particularly on politics and culture in the Arab and Muslim world. And she's also here in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Mona. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks.
We're very excited because Mona and I have been interviewing for years, and I've never met her before, and she's here. And also with us on the phone from Cairo is Hannah Alam, Cairo bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers. Hannah, welcome to you.
Hello.
Well, now that I have four distinguished female foreign correspondents here, you know I'm going to want to talk about some sensitive issues, particularly the attack on Lara Logan. But before we do, obviously the story dominating the headlines in this country was the death of Osama bin Laden. So, Hannah, I am dying to ask you how the story is being covered in Egypt right now.
Well, I've just come this afternoon from a protest of a few hundred people outside of one of the main mosques here in Cairo, and this was kind of a morning service for Osama bin Laden. But I have to stress that this is a few hundred people in a country of about 85 million. And even the small group that, you know, proceeded to march on to the U.S. embassy, and they were chanting against Obama, President Obama, and U.S. policy in general, even they met resistance from fellow Egyptians along the way, with people saying, you know, how silly of you, you're mourning a terrorist. Don't we have bigger things to worry about? And so, you know, definitely some small pockets here of sympathy for him. But I think people have seen now that through protests and civil disobedience, they can do more harm to these repressive regimes than Al-Qaeda ever did. That being said, as long as there's I think that Al-Qaeda's general message as a, you know, self-proclaimed defender of Muslims and Arabs, I think that message will resonate in some quarters as long as there's foreign occupation, rather lopsided U.S. Approach on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and these repressive regimes that, of course, ordinary people now are working to get rid of.
One of the things many people were saying is that these Arab Spring uprisings have really taken all the glory away from Al-Qaeda. They, in fact, are what made Al-Qaeda yesterday's news already.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been saying that Osama bin Laden's physical death has finally caught up with his symbolic death that I believe happened many years ago, largely for the reasons that Hannah already mentioned about these revolutions and uprisings in the Middle East and North Africa. When you look at a country like Yemen, where Al-Qaeda does have a presence, Yemenis have gone out onto the street to overthrow Ali Abdullah Saleh, not using weapons, not following Al-Qaeda's lead, not even involving Al-Qaeda in their revolution. And Yemen is one of the most armed societies in the Middle East and North Africa, and not one bullet has been fired from the Yemeni revolutionaries, which clearly states to us, you know, if we want to see, because we really do want to see this about people in the Middle East and North Africa, that those revolutionaries in Yemen, in the same way that revolutionaries in Egypt and Tunisia and other places, look at Syria today, don't believe that Al-Qaeda will get rid of these repressive regimes. They believe that their own will and their own courage will do so.
Again, what about you? I know that you've spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, obviously. So you're here in the U.S. at the moment. But what is your sense of how this news is being received there from what your sources are telling you?
Sure. I mean, I think there's real concern about what this means for the international effort in Afghanistan. You know, a lot of people, particularly women that you talk to, remember 1989 when the Russians left and the country fell into several years later, a really brutal civil war that raged from 1992 to 1996 when the Taliban came into Kabul. And so I think that is what people wonder is what comes next? What does this mean? Will the U.S. and the international community pull up stakes before our own security forces are ready? Will this be a way for people to withdraw with some face saved, but not a lot of progress made on the ground? I think that's one of the things you hear often in Afghanistan.
Jamie, what do you want to add? You spent so much time in Baghdad, and I know you're here stateside now, but I'm just interested in what you think. What is next in the parts of the world that you spent most of your time?
Well, I do think that along with Gail, that we will see a more accelerated withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan now, much more than it was maybe a week ago. But, you know, I have to agree with Mona that, you know, the message that bin Laden and al-Qaeda were projecting, let's not forget that in many of the attacks that they launched, their victims were Muslim, and their message was rejected by so many people, and the Arab Spring that we're seeing it was the biggest message of all to say we don't actually want to return to a 7th century caliphate. We actually want to live in the now, and we want to have the liberties and the opportunities that everybody else is doing, and there's been no greater sort of validation of that than what's happening, and as you pointed out, with, you know, as little violence as possible.
Well, Mona was making that point that these uprisings, I mean, obviously Libya is an ongoing story, Syria is an ongoing story, but the what started it all, Tunisia and Egypt, largely nonviolent. But there was there was brutality within the movement, and one of the stories that I think got a lot of attention here in the United States was that of involving CBS chief foreign correspondent Lara Logan, who was just viciously assaulted in Tahrir Square last February, after the government had already fallen, while people were in a celebratory state, which is, I think, kind of what shocked a lot of people. I think a lot of people felt that had this occurred when, you know, pro-government forces were still trying to push back, you could have seen this as an attack on the idea that, you know, these foreigners are supporting the demonstrators. But this happened after the Mubarak had stepped down. And she talked about this on 60 Minutes earlier this week, and it was a very hard to hear, particularly if you know her. But I'll just play a short clip, and I'm not going to play the most graphic part of it in deference to those who may be listening, but I'll just play a short clip of what she experienced. Here it is.
They were tearing my body in every direction at this point, tearing my muscles, and they were trying to tear off chunks of my scalp. They had my head in different directions.
You know, one of the reasons we're excited to have all of you with us today, besides the fact that you're so fabulous, is that, but goes without saying, is that all of you have spent a lot of time in the trenches. I mean, Jamie and Hannah, you both reported from Baghdad during the Iraq War. Mona, you've been a reporter, since you were a baby. You reported in the Middle East for, a decade. Gail, you spent lots of time in Afghanistan and in Rwanda. And there are those who wonder whether this is kind of a breakthrough moment in the sense that, Jamie, I'll just start with you. Many people have said that reporters generally have not talked about what they experience in the field because they then don't want to be kept out of the fray. And I wonder how you react to A, what happened to Lara, and, B, her decision now to talk about it.
I have so many feelings about this, and, my heart just goes out to Lara. And, I mean, the fact that she was so brave to speak out, I've had that fear of that sort of thing happening to me, but I've never had that pain. So I've been really thankful that I've never been in a situation that she found herself in. But the thing that struck me the most about this whole thing from when she first was actually brave enough to say this happened to me was the response that we heard from people who were saying, how could this have happened to her? You know, she's an A-lister. She's so important and she's so famous, and how can this happen? And I want to say it does happen. And if Lara couldn't speak out with the position that she has and the celebrity that she has, then what is left of the lower sort of, wire reporter on the bottom of the rung who has this happen to them all the time without the attention and has to simply carry on?
I'm puzzled by that. I'm puzzled by many of the reactions, frankly, because, she's not an A-lister in Egypt. So I don't understand that.
But she has an entourage. She has security. She has people who travel with her. So she's, how could this happen to her of all people? But the response to me was, well, it happens, and you have to whether you have people protecting you or you don't, you are a female, and these are some of the things that you have to come across. But my she's never going to get fired for coming out and saying these things, and maybe it took somebody like Lara to say this to sort of open the floodgates for other people to say, actually, this has happened to me too.
Hannah, what do you think about it?
Well, to have had it play out right here in Egypt, it's such a time of celebration. I think it was so shocking to people. And in addition to the people who immediately attacked her and questioned, what could she have done to have drawn this attack on her? And and all of that nonsense. I mean, there were also people just really deeply sad that it happened and embarrassed that it happened and considered it, you know, tarnishing of the revolution, because Tahrir Square had been such a little sanctuary amid all the brutality from the state-allied mobs. But I think it just goes to show that mob violence that can, I mean, I often think of it as far more dangerous and more terrifying than the bombs and bullets and tear gas and other things that I encounter on my job, because those mobs can turn instantly and really in seconds from even a celebratory mood to a very violent mob that's out to do you harm. And even if you have a professional bodyguard with you and a whole team and two drivers, that doesn't mean much when there's this swell of people rushing at you and grabbing at you and tearing at you. And I think it just is part and parcel of this job we do. But the fact that now that we can, you know, perhaps talk about it more openly is something that I think we should be grateful to Lara Logan for so bravely giving her account.
Mona, what do you think?
I have a million and one feelings about this. I think, you know, I know a young Muslim woman in Canada who says, you know, as Muslim women, I speak as an Egyptian and a Muslim woman, we often feel caught between the racist and the misogynist. And this all came out after Lara Logan bravely spoke out. But I have to disagree with a lot of people who are saying she's the first one who spoke out. She's the first one. You know, I unequivocally condemn what happened to her. It's horrendous. It's heartbreaking. But there have been so many Egyptian women who have spoken out about the sexual assaults that they've faced at the hands of the Mubarak regime and while reporting in Egypt that I know.
On the street, or you mean by security forces?
By everything. By security forces, by regular people. My nipple was twisted during a news conference with Gaddafi. One of Gaddafi's bodyguards just reached out and just assaulted my breast in the middle of a news conference. And I've written about that. And I just say that because it bothers me that we're thinking that, you know, again, I state, you know, I condemn what happened to her, but Lara's not the first person who's spoken out about this. And I say this because sometimes it feels to me, as the Egyptian Muslim woman, that it's only when a white woman speaks out about something that we recognize it happened. And Egyptian women have been speaking out, and women in the Middle East and North Africa and other parts of the world have talked about what it's like to be a woman and face all these things as a journalist too, but we never listened to them. But we only now listen because Lara has said it.
Who's the we in this conversation, though? Because there are conversations you have internally and there are conversations you have with other, you know, outside, you know, the world. And so, you know, one of the things I find is that often when Western reporters want to report on these issues in other countries, they're attacked for being racist. Like, oh, you're bringing your attitude over here and we don't want to hear it from you.
Right.
So and why wouldn't Americans be particularly interested in what happens to one of their country women? I mean, I'm a little puzzled by who is the we.
The we is the media. And I think it's the media that also doesn't want to hear the women there, the indigenous women, when they speak out. It's fine when they're reporting about those indigenous women. But when the indigenous women are themselves saying, this is what happens, and we want to highlight this. Do you see what I'm saying? It's the other way that the information flows.
But shouldn't the Egyptian media be reporting on this about something that happens? I mean, I must tell you that.
It has.
Go ahead, Gaya.
I can jump in here. I've been reporting on violence against Egyptian women for, you know, for years here.
That's Hannah, for example. That's Hannah Aaron.
Everything from female genital mutilation to the sexual harassment maps that they're trying to start to pinpoint where, you know, some of the worst spots are in Cairo for the harassment. So absolutely, Mona's right. It's something that's been talked about for years. I think this highlights, Lara Logan's story highlights some of the different obstacles faced by foreign women coming to cover these protests. So, but I mean, that's not at all to take away from some of the daily suffering of Egyptian women. I mean, you can't walk down the street without getting catcalled or the, you know, whispered filthy remarks or whatever. And it really doesn't matter if you're veiled or blonde or what.
Yeah. Or what? No, I remember I haven't been in Egypt for years, but one of the things that floored me when I went there, you know, foolishly on my own, I was breaking off from a reporting trip elsewhere in the region, and I decided to go just because I was there, that people felt it just could come right up and touch you anywhere. And I, you know, confess that this was, you know, years ago, but I had no idea that this was. And people will say, well, what did you expect? Well, not that, I confess. Gail, what about you? You know, one of the interesting things that, you know, you've spent so much time in Afghanistan, one of the things I'm interested in the reporting is that a lot of women in the West have really try to keep the focus on Afghani women and what their circumstances are, and that is not always appreciated. What are your reactions here?
Well, I think two things. One is that, of course, it's incredibly heartbreaking, and I do think it's very courageous of her to go on 60 Minutes and talk about this. But I thought one of the other things that was interesting was the reaction that a lot of people in the public had, which was, well, why was she there in the first place? And I think that is just outrageous.
Do you think that's because she's a woman or because she's a mother?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Because she's a woman or because she's a mother?
Both, both. And I mean, look, Anderson Cooper was assaulted. And no one said, why was Anderson Cooper in Cairo? You know, I mean, when it happened that it was Laura Logan, the questions almost immediately on the internet and on blogs and the blogosphere was, you know, well, should she have been there? Well, that's her job. And, yeah. You know, I wrote this piece about it for the Huffington Post because there was a really powerful interview that she'd given right before talking about she got on the plane talking about how she had just talked to her husband about the decision to go back. To Egypt. And I think that every reporter who goes into tough zones, wherever you are in the world, if you have a family, you have that conversation. And it's a very personal conversation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was giving a book talk recently, and this woman actually came out and said, well, don't you think it's irresponsible that you would go back to Afghanistan now that you're a mom?
And
I said, do you ask that to male reporters when they're up here talking about their experiences? And she said, it's different.
Well, okay. Does she still have her hair? I mean, did you snatch it off her head? I'm just speaking of, does she still have her? Well, thank you all, Lydia. I hate to end on that. Well, I'm glad we ended on that spicy note. I want to say happy Mother's Day to the mothers, happy human day to the humans. And thank you all so much for being with us. That was Gail Zemach-Lemann. She was with us from NPR West. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dressmaker of Karkana, and she's a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. With us from Cairo, Hannah Alam. She is the Cairo Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers. Here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio, Mona Al-Tahawi, a columnist, a very well-known columnist and speaker. And she was here with Jamie Tarabay, Managing Editor on National Security for the National Journal, and our former and much-loved NPR Baghdad Bureau Chief. Ladies, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.